My name is Leo Kim, and I'm a PhD student at Queen's University, working with Joe, who's not here because he's enjoying California weather. And today I'm going to talk about one of my projects that I did with Joe and also a postdoc at Queen's, who's also going to be giving the next talk, Melissa. And the project is the effect of multiple cooling channels on the formation of dark compact objects. So let's just get started. So I think after Sarah's introduction, I don't really have to go through this slide too much in detail, which is good because I don't have too much time. But we know, like, large scale, small scale, there's a ton of effort being done for dark matter research there. So let's start looking at intermediate scale kind of observables for dark matter. And the one that I'm thinking about, and the one that Sarah thought about as well, is dark compact objects. And the types of questions that I want to answer, or we wanted to answer in this project, was, if dark matter can dissipate, it can make compact objects, which can result in a sort of a landscape of compact objects, that, as you might have seen. And so you can get dark pressure-supported stars, or you can get dark black holes. And these are really fun and interesting to look at. And so the question is, how does the different scenarios of cooling or the different particle physics models really affect what possible landscapes you can get out of these things? OK, so how to make compact objects. So in the standard model, you might have seen that stars form due to dissipative processes, right? And so the gas particles, because of the fact that they're able to lose their kinetic energy, they can fall further into their gravitational potential and therefore can collapse and make compact objects. The only issue with that is that the standard model is disgustingly complex, where star formation is very, very hard to really get a full image of. And so we're going to cool in a very, very simple sector. And I mean very simple. So think about Sarah's atomic dark matter, dark proton, dark electron, dark photon. Subtract the dark proton, so we only have two things now. And so if I was to make this analogy that I'm borrowing from Daniel, which he made with like Lego blocks, if the standard model is this Michelin star Gordon Ramsay restaurant, then what we're thinking about is this easy bake toy oven kind of thing. I guess those two packets there could be like the dark electron and the dark photon. Okay, so in Chang et al., which Daniel worked in the back has worked on, they considered a simple asymmetric and subdominant dark sector composed of the dark electron and the dark photon. And they showed that this would lead to Bremsstrahlung processes, which can actually, which is the cooling mechanism that they considered in their work. Okay. And I'm just going to show these plots really quickly. But what they did was they kind of looked at the individual lives of these compact objects and took them through their evolution, and also looked at the resulting possible landscape that you can get as a function of the model parameters. So we're going to be doing something similar. We're just going to be adding one additional cooling channel and seeing how that changes both of these things there. OK. So following up on my easy bake oven analogy, all we're doing is our parents went out and bought us an expansion pack, and now we can add one more thing. So we're introducing, so it's the same model essentially, but we're introducing one more thing, which is a mass splitting for the fermion. And so you can get an excited and a ground state for the fermion. And from your excited state decaying into your ground state, you can have a dark photon emission, therefore another way to lose energy. And so new inelastic processes allow for new ways to cool. How does this affect compact object formation? So there's only one more physics, particle physics parameter in our model, which is the mass splitting scale. The other three are the same as in the paper that I'm talking about.
So in this case, you don't have a dark temperature?
We do have a dark temperature.
So what is set by hand, or is it set by the mechanism of dark matter?
Set by hand, we'll say for now.
Okay,
so this is the process that I'm talking about, where you have two ground state particles upscattering in your gas of chi1 particles. And they'll either lead to a chi2, chi2 excited state pair or a chi1, chi2 mixed pair. And these things, we're setting it by hand so that they have a relatively short decay time. And so they'll decay right away and therefore emitting dark photons away. And so this is what a cooling rate, it's a lot simpler than Sarah's cooling rates. This is what the cooling rate would look like if you had these two kind of cooling channel things, where you can see at lower temperatures, you're completely dominated by the Bremsstrahlung cooling channel. And at higher temperatures, this inelastic cooling channel kind of comes into play. And actually, this shape is very important because this is what determines a lot of what happens in our evolution. And so this is done with these model parameters that I'll just flash. And you can see how changing the model parameters changes the shape of these things. And so that allows us to define a cooling time scale, which we plug into this thermodynamical kind of differential equation that governs the evolution of this clump. Very simplified approach. Okay, so if we do that, I'm just going to go through like the three stages of very simplified collapse that they considered in Chang et al, which they also took from star formation literature. So first, this thing will just fall due to gravity. And then you have your pressure term kind of kicking in, and you go through this nearly virialized contraction phase. And then finally, I am very proud of this animation. You have, I'm going to play it again. And then you have these kind of like fragmentation effects happening where smaller clumps start coming up. And fragmentation stops for one of two reasons. One is because cooling becomes inefficient, or because the pressure of the halo becomes dominated by the dark repulsive force. Okay, with that being said, let's look at what a possible landscape can look like. So I'm going to start and kind of follow or kind of take you along the life of this thing. So it'll start with some number density and temperature, evolve in this adiabatic free fall region. And if we're lucky enough, it'll fall outside of this blue region where cooling is inefficient. So the cooling time scales are longer than the age of the universe. So we want to be out of here. It'll go along this constant genes mass contour and go through this nearly virialized contraction phase until it hits this green fragmentation contour, which is where the cooling time scales is smaller than the free fall time scales. It'll follow along and fragment. And so you're tracking really just the minimal fragments in this case until it becomes optically thick and it becomes or pressure supported. And then once we're there, we can read off what the final fragmentation mass is. Okay, so I think I covered everything. And so what that green dashed line, I'm not tall enough, but that green dashed line over there is what the fragmentation contour would have looked like if we only considered Bremsstrahlung. And so you can really see the shape of that cooling curve I told you before, where this whole chunky thing down here is due to the inelastic cooling channel.
There's a pointer right there.
Oh, okay. Now I am tall enough. Okay. All right. Okay. And so one thing to note is that the end scenario in this case is kind of doesn't really care if you want Bremsstrahlung or if you want inelastic, then Bremsstrahlung, right? Because you're really only tracking the minimal fragments in this thing. You would end up with the same mass because you have the same stop condition pretty much. But in the scenario where you have a something that's completely inelastic cooling dominated, so the Bremsstrahlung cooling channel here is kind of invisible, right? Then you would get a different effect than, or a different end than what you would have expected with only Bremsstrahlung. So this would have been probably your stop condition before. Now you get this kind of shift in the final fragmentation masses. And the dashed lines are just a different initial condition. But as long as you end up on this contour, you have the same end result. Okay, so what do these, so I mentioned the landscape of these things. What do they look like? So let's fix our alpha dark and our mass splitting and just look at it as a function of your fermion and your photon. So this is what it would look like. And if I were to pull up an image from the paper we're basing our work off, which is Chang et al, you'll see that in their work, which only had Bremsstrahlung cooling, you get these nice contours just going up. Whereas in ours, we have this the Bremsstrahlung features here. But then as we go to higher dark fermion masses, we actually get this dip. And so we end up with lower masses than what we would have seen, which makes sense. We've introduced this new cooling channel, so we cool faster. We get lighter objects. And so this is really a feature of that, that cooling curve that I showed you before. So the particle physics kind of effects are embedded in this whole picture there. And at the bottom right here is where we would get black holes. Black holes are kind of hard to form, but we do get some black holes. Okay. So we're just really comparing the size of this thing with its short shot radius.
Okay.
So it's not the best condition, but it's, yeah. It's a very simplified kind of. Okay. And so I think actually I did pretty well on time. So to summarize, dissipative dark sectors can influence the formation and evolution of these things, of compact objects. And again, in our work, we only really wanted to consider how the final fragments would change if we added this new inelastic cooling channel, or any really any cooling channel in general. And we saw how different the landscape looked like if you were to do that. So in the future, as Sarah mentioned, we can go to simulation people and ask them to do a better job of what we did. And the other thing is that we can actually, in this work, we weren't really focused about the possible observables or anything, or whether it's astrophysical or cosmological, but we really wanted to look at how this extra cooling channel changed. But what you could do is you can also look for subsolar mass black holes, which we do get for some part of parameter space for the reasons that Sarah has said before. Okay, and I think that's it. Yeah.
Questions?
Maybe to sort of reprise the question of the last talk about abundance, actually, because here you have a slightly more concrete setup. So maybe, do you know if the parameters have been mapped to dark matter abundances in the context of this particular of the particular model that you're using here?
So I'm sure that in Daniel and in the Chang et al. Paper they have, but in our work, because we're only considering the effects of what we kind of left that aside, yeah, and we didn't really consider it. But I don't know, maybe.
Can you go to the plot that you were trying to evaluate for the mountain?
Yeah. This one, or? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like, your intuition by like lowering the mass, so you get like so much, it's like a cooling efficiency. But when you reduce the mass of the splitting state, so small, you kind of like have a better.
Sorry, can you rephrase your question?
Okay, so why you get black hole for a small -9?
Oh, I see. I see. So, like, why are we getting these?
You feel like you are better cooling because, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
You actually have to, like, intuition. Like, I don't have intuition why it should be like that.
Right. So, if I go back to. Sorry, there's a lot of. Where's my cooling curve? Ah, there it is. Right, so if I go and decide to make my alpha dark lighter, right? Or sorry, not alpha dark, gamma dark lighter, what happens is this cooling channel turns on earlier, right? So you need lower energy to turn this thing on. And so you can start cooling at much lower densities.
I'm confused something. Yeah, okay, good.
Both for you and Sam, I guess. If you keep making the dark photon lighter, do you have to worry about plasma effects? At some point, you have long range collisions, like bullet cluster like invariants, but for your dark matter.
Yep. I think if you keep going down lighter, yeah, you will have to worry about them. But
it'll be fine. I think KV, it's fine. Mm-hmm. If you go below EV, I worry.
I
don't think it changes your picture. Mm-hmm. I think it may change large scale.
Right, yeah, we're working in the regime where we don't have to.
We worry about it a lot.
But we're safe. We're okay. Yeah.
The dark matter has no monopole. It's dark electrical neutral. So you're talking about
it's not neutral.
Oh, it's dark electrical.
Yeah.
And if you have a dark electron, proton, photon, that's the same, right?
Well, that's actually quite interesting that you can get. A different scale from plasma instabilities, right? So you can get smaller size clumps.
I don't know if it's the same with plasma instabilities that we get in the standard model, because those are cases where you've got like a tube of electrons that are like being kept in place by like a magnetic field. And so a system which might be a bit different from these, where it's just a ball of electrons that are kind of being held in place by gravity. As far as we can tell, like, managed to avoid a lot of your plasma dynamics.
I think the point is, if your dark photon is light enough, you should have B fields of some kind. Right? You can think of the B field as zero momentum modes in a way, right?
Yeah. So you cannot have that. So in this model, there cannot be a massless dark photon, for instance. dark matter, right? So there's no way to build a UOP model where the dark matter must have that like, kind of big mass. So actually, big masses are preferred. If you go too low, then the model doesn't make sense.
And if you have a positive charge, you could.
If you had a positive charge, then you all play with the mass. But then the model that they are discussing is, well, just you wouldn't fall, right? So because then you need to find bounces. So if you give a mass to the dark bottom, then at some point you won't fall off. So they have some pooling, so then, of course, there's a range where you all have plasma instabilities that will be interesting, but it's unclear. Let me give you an example. So these things can all pool, all going to compact objects, no gas. And then what plasma instabilities there will be? Not really. There will be, all these things will be just point-like objects floating around, moving in the extract matter.
They all did that.
Yeah, but it's kind of reasonable to think that they will all go to compact objects because here there's no What I mean is that if these things hold, there's no feedback to prevent them from going to compact objects. In the standard model, you turn off feedback and you do have simulations. Everything goes into stars. And you follow like this dry doors. Nothing ends up in gas. So then it's big, but what's making the standard model not have such a big number of stars?
This is an opportunity to thank your speaker again.